Cheese greetings, all you verbal shenanigans lovers. It's Sarah Kaufman, the cheese lady. Glad to be here.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hey guys, long time no talk. It's been a whole week. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Mike's over there and I'm over here, and this about feels like the only normal thing going on right now, Mike, in this slow news world we're currently in.
You know, things have been basic. Nothing really to report on any end. I haven't heard any new tour dates that for anybody. For some reason, I must have not got the right cable package because I can't find my local sports.
Right, right. So you can't find that Atlanta rugby game that you've been trying to watch?
Weird. They just announced the cancellation of the league for this year.
See what we did?
Yeah. One week after talking to us, look what happens. Mm-hmm. I looked at my local movie theaters. Nothing is playing. It just an odd calm going out there, Scotty.
Yeah.
Clearly, we won't specify exactly what.
No. We'll just talk about the Tom Brady signing for the next 2 hours. We'll just talk about that.
Absolutely. They better go back to the creamsicles for Tom Brady.
Now, clearly this is it's a very strange time, obviously, for everyone. And it's hard for, it's hard for either Mike or I or anybody who is trying to do any kind of entertainment to kind of, come at this from a different angle or really, dissected in a way that's unique. But I will tell you that it's very comforting to be able to sit here, and be able to get on the microphone and Skype with Mike. So we are able to do something that is familiar that we do on Monday nights. And it's kind of like, hey, this is our normal thing where everything outside of this office that I'm podcasting in is craziness going on, people losing jobs, people panicking, people sick, people worried about spreading things. And then here we're able to just be goofballs for an hour, hour and a half. So it is comforting to be here with you guys and who's ever listening. And in a way, it's comforting to be here with you too, Mike.
Well, thank you, Scotty. I mean, I once again prove I am the answer to all great things, but
Jesus Christ. Guys,
you rang?
Mike?
No.
I can't wait till 10 years from now I'm wrong and there's some kind of documentary on you on Netflix on how you had this Georgian cult and the real reason you moved from Jersey to Georgia is to form these dog-loving, cultish people that eventually they all kill themselves for you, and it's all about the behind-the-scenes things of your Jesus complex.
Well, I mean, I won't ask them all to do that, Scott. I mean, just the annoying ones, you know. But right. But in all seriousness, I would probably say work-wise, this is the last time I felt like this. The amount of work I've been doing IT wise was probably 9/11, because I'd literally probably worked easily about 15-16 hours almost every day. Not Sunday, but everything leading up to it, just getting stuff ready, panicking, getting right. People ready to work from home and all. It was an odd feeling, and I'd say one of the weirdest moments. I remember a Monday night, it was one of our coworkers' birthdays, and just completely exhausted, but we just said, you know what, we'll just go to a bar, just find a table by ourselves and like do one drink to celebrate our friend. And I remember walking outside and it was like foggy and it was dark and it was quiet and it was just, it just fit everything that's been happening. As like, it was just so weird, yeah. Kind of nerve-wracking, almost a tad bit scary kind of feeling just walking out to the quiet, you know?
Yeah, there is an odd quiet. There's a quiet now here in Jersey where, I don't know, like even I had to run to the grocery store before. And it's just I'm looking at you. He's looking at me. I heard someone cough and I was like, you know, like I like ran the other way, like got away. It's just this weird like judging, like, oh, he has it, she has it. Like, oh, I just want to get in here and out. I went to Walgreens to pick up something from Walgreens, and it was like there was not a person in the whole place. And it was really weird. And then I almost feel guilty that I'm out there like grabbing something real quick and going home. And it's just it's a really bizarre, and it's something that no one could say that they've been through this before, because it hasn't happened in our we had swine flu, but the mass hysteria of it has never been on this level in our lifetime or our parents' lifetime.
It's hard to say. I mean, you probably got to go back to like
Verbal 30s. Shenanigans episode one.
No. Oh. Well past that. Well past that. I mean, you got to go probably to the 30s or like polio. You maybe have to go as far back as Spanish flu, the Black Plague. It's, I mean, I guess the closest we can say in our lifetime, technically, and I know it's in a different sphere, but probably AIDS,
right?
Because there was the longest time people were, until we figured out AIDS a little bit, people were petrified even to touch somebody. And there's like questions of, you know, do I get it from kissing? Is it? And then there's all the stereotypes of, okay, that's the gay disease, I can't get it. And it's just a very weird kind of mindset where you almost have an opinion, but deep down you say to yourself, you probably don't know what your opinion should be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about it seriously. So we're recording on a Thursday night because Mike's been working a lot, you know, into the night where we usually record on Monday. So Mike, that puts a week and a half out of since we last talked. And think about what's happened in those 10 days. In 10 days, last time we were talking about, like, yeah, this could get serious. I was saying that, you know, some people think it was like a hoax to try to affect Donald Trump. We were saying, like, yeah, it could get bad. We're starting to hear about it more. In 10 days, if I went back and listened, it would kind of be an interesting, like, juxtaposition, like, just to hear what we're saying 10 days ago and what we're saying now. So it's really, it's really interesting. It's something that I think, we were recording before, but we had a recording issue. I had said that I think a couple of positives can come from this, but one of the positives I think that can come from this is that it does not affect just Democrats. It does not just affect Republicans. It doesn't affect the rich. It doesn't affect the women. It doesn't affect men. It doesn't affect the gays. It doesn't affect just the blacks or Asians. It's really affecting every person, type of person, every ethnicity, every age. You look at your reported cases in your state or whatever, and it's like, you know, yeah, it's a lot of older people who are dying from it, but the people who are diagnosed with it are of every age you can imagine. So if there's one thing it could do, it could cut the BS out of this, the divide, especially in the United States. I'm sure it's like this everywhere, especially since social media, but the divide the United States has that, hey, like, you have to work together, whether your opinions are different from one another. You have to pull the right and the left, if you will, towards the center and figure something out. Like, and that's how everything should be kind of, you know, figured out.
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is we have no choices in this matter, regardless of how you feel
right
on certain things, because at the end of the day, we don't know how long this is going to be. We don't know how many people are going to get affected. We don't know what's going to happen after this. We don't know who is owed what money. We don't know who is allowed to be removed from their jobs or who's kind of grandfathered. And it's just such a weird state where you literally can say there's a possibility that like a fifth to a quarter of the people don't have a job. But it's almost like the government has to decide, because you look down the list. I mean, are we going to let all the cruise ship companies go bankrupt because they can't do anything? Are you going to allow all the airlines to go bankrupt? Are you going to allow all the movie companies to go bankrupt? As much as they have like billions of dollars and all, I mean, they basically have sets everywhere and it's just ripping money apart. There's no way of determining what the next steps is, and the only way we're going to get through it is just coming together and kind of be like, all right, if we have disagreements, we can work through this, but we cannot stop working together, because there will be zero possibilities going to work if we don't be an entire unit.
Yeah. And maybe that's that for a brief moment in time that people talk about after 9/11. You remember that camaraderie, like, hey, like, help a neighbor out. And unfortunately, I do think, like, you know, whether this lasts into the summer or early fall, what is that? What comes right after that? Election season, which will be the first thing to just completely divide everyone back up into two teams again. But right, for the time being, like, maybe it's a good thing to, like, no, it's not a good thing, but in the wake of something terrible, to kind of bring someone, to bring people together at least a little bit and realize, like, hey, you're only human. Hey, Kevin Durant has it, one of the greatest athletes. Hey, the greatest coaches have it. Tom Hanks has it. Idris Elba has it. Like, it doesn't discriminate. So, you know, for once, the rich can't get their way out of it yet. You know, it's not a racial thing. It's not a age thing. So I hope people realize that at least. But it is a creepy feeling. What is your fear level as far as not like that you're gonna die, because I don't think that's like, I mean, I don't think that's realistic. But your fear as far as like my fear is this lasting for 6 months, lasting for long time. My wife losing her job if they have to cut. Like that kind of fear, like impact fear. I would say mine, honestly, it's probably like at a 4.5-ish. I'm not quite over the halfway point, but I'm building up, man. The more I see it, I'm kind of like, oh God, like one more thing I didn't think about happens.
I would say I'm somewhere in the 4 to 6 range. I'm not here doing any concerns about my health at the moment. I think there's concerns, obviously, like my dad and mom drove back to Georgia because they have some, they had medical appointments and they have the prescriptions to get.
Right.
I have a fear they'll be here and I can't go see them. I have a concern about, like I said a minute ago, I have zero idea what the future economy is, because if you're just going to produce money with no backing behind it, then what in essence is money?
Yeah.
We're just sending out payments, and I don't want to make this political in any way. I'm not saying anything about our president or anything like that. I understand what they're doing. I'm backing it, all that fun stuff. I'm curious as to what this will behold. I have concerns where it will be something like, if I want to get groceries, I have an appointment, or I have to go through an app, and I'm only going to be given XYZ 1, 2, 3.
I mean, maybe it makes you, in the end, one good thing is that you appreciate the lifestyle you have. You appreciate going out to a bar, going to grab food, going out to eat, being able to be home from work at 5 o'clock, whatever it is. Maybe that's another benefit. Like, hey, we, as much as you think how bad you have it, and you see people saying how awful, like over the stupidest things, you don't have it that bad. It could be and look at now, it's changing lives daily.
Can you imagine that first party after this outbreak? Like, imagine, like, they say it's cured. By the way, tomorrow's the 4th of July.
Yeah.
This country will go ballistic nuts in fireworks and bonfires and orgies and whatever you could do. People going to do it.
I think people will be weird.
Have you ever done that before? Sure,
I think,
why not?
I think people might be a little weird with, like, hey, we're going to play beer pong, but bring your own cups. I'm not drinking. I think the germophobia thing is going to stay for a little while.
With some people, but you look at it, kids went to spring break this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, literally, beaches were crowded. And people are saying, what are you doing? And they're like, well, we're not scared, and I planned this. No, there's a lot of things I planned in life. A pandemic kind of mixes up the schedule.
Yeah, well, that's one of the talking points I did want to get to. So here in New Jersey, I got to say, 90% of the people I run into or see online or whatever seem to be taking the pandemic seriously. There is the social distancing or whatever. People are trying to stay in and posting pictures from home and doing their thing. And I think they really are taking it seriously. So I do, in all the darkness, I posted even something the other day, like, there is light. Like, a lot of people are heeding the warnings. They're doing everything they can as far as staying in and keeping their kids home and doing what they got to do and teaching from home. There's so many things that are impacting. So I feel like a large part are, and you get the occasional ignorant idiot. I know we were talking the other day. What are you seeing down by you?
I see distancing. My wife and I went for a walk today. We invited our friend that we do those marathons with, and how we do our walk is we're on one side of the street, she's on the other side of the street. We'll chat the entire way, but we just keep a lot of distance. We see somebody walking on the same side as us, we kind of stop for a minute, wait for our neighbor to go a little bit,
right,
cross the road to give that other person space, and then we go back to our side of the road. I have seen these.
Yeah, but you guys are doing the right thing.
But I've also seen the other side where, like our gym that we go to, where one of the trainers put up, I don't know why everybody's not using common sense. We're not Italy. It's not going to be like that. And people going to Taekwondo and stuff like that.
I love that. We're just not Italy. What does that mean? We have different borders.
Yeah, totally different time zone. Not the same kind of immune system, if you will. So it's one of those, like, you gotta be kidding. And I've actually seen my wife's shown some Facebook said when nurses are like, oh, some people are blowing it out of proportion. While at the same time, I hear rumblings about the National Guard being down here and questions about whether we're going to be joining states like New Jersey and shutting down pretty much everything in our state.
Are you guys currently restaurants and everything shut down or no?
No. Wow. No. You can go anywhere. Bars aren't closed. Restaurants aren't closed. Everything's like that. I mean, Florida's starting to shut down a little bit, but I was talking to my dad in between the interview we did this week, and we chatted. He said how the president came out and said we shouldn't have more than 10 people in a place at a time. And there's a bar by where they their winter home in Okeechobee, where they said, well, our state law says we can have up to 40 people in a room, so we're going to allow that. And it's like, okay, this is not like gun control or something like that. This is a disease.
Yep.
And Florida has a thing called old people, and old people don't mix well with this disease.
I also like, I'm very suspect of these arbitrational numbers they come up with, like, oh, well, it's you're safe if it's 10 people, but anything more than that, I think it's, you know, that should tell you something right there. If they're saying like 10 people, like, I think they're only saying 10 people because they don't want people to panic even more. That's why I think they've been staggering how much they lower, like 50, no, it was like 200, then 50, then 10. Like, unfortunately, I feel like we have all been exposed to this for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and it disguised itself as a cold or symptoms that we're used to. And I think we're all going to come in contact with it, or maybe have had it. The fact that you might not even feel any symptoms, like, I feel like it's just going to be out there, like the common cold that everyone breathes in, everyone comes in contact with.
Well, there was even a rumor, as West Virginia just officially made all 50 states with it.
Yep.
I heard stories how they had like a weird flu going around in November, where like people were having respiratory issues that the doctors couldn't figure out, and then eventually it kind of bypassed. So there's a question of maybe they had it, and this was before we really knew the pandemic was coming. I don't, and it's impossible to figure out because there's not enough tests out there. It's
almost in a way that like tests are going to be positive as far as showing people how bad it is, but negative as far as just seeing the sheer panic that's going to happen when they see how many people are affected. Like, negative is like it's going to show you how much, but the positive of not having them is like, oh, the kind of like, all right, I feel kind of safe, like, in a way.
Mm. Well, I think people just won't do it after they see the video. I'm not sure if you saw in like Barstool,
yep,
where the guy got tested and they basically shove a Q-tip like 3/4 of the way up his nose.
Yep,
I'm sure people will be looking at it like, oh, not for me, and stuff like that.
I think that was important that he posted that. I thought it was a great post, actually.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see that, but
looks like a movie, man.
It's a weird feeling, like going back to what I said, like that Monday night, like I worked probably from like 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. just working on giving out laptops to people and then like troubleshooting stuff or whatever.
You said lap dances?
I remember. What's up?
Lap dances, you said?
Laptop. So.
Oh.
Yeah, we helped on the call center.
Yeah.
Basically getting everybody who's on a desktop, here's a laptop, go home and take calls there. Yeah. But like after we did that, and like I said, I went for a quick drink to just wish a friend happy birthday. I was so exhausted driving home, and like I had like a stuffed nose and I was so tired. And like I'm literally driving saying to myself, oh God, did I just work too much, and is my throat itchy because I didn't have my breaks where I go get water, or is this something? And it's just, and your mind goes a mile a minute, and then you go, I'm driving home to my wife. Do I want to do this? And
well, it's funny. It's because like every year around this time, I get like a dry cough, like a, you know, it's like, and it's always because like the pollen and stuff like that's starting to come out. And I've had it like the last couple of days. I'm like, do I have coronavirus? Like, it's just the endless questions. And you hear blah, blah, blah. And the case is getting closer and closer and closer. And people, I will tell you, I have been in relative vicinity now where I can trace if I did it. If I was, how I could have gotten it if I have it, which is nuts,
But and we're still in that weird spot where, like, the second you cough, it's like, oh, you got corona, and everybody's like, ha ha ha.
Yep.
And then, like, a minute later, you're kind of like, okay, stop coughing now.
Well, it's funny, like, as you were saying this, I looked up some of the numbers and whatnot. And, like, you say people are being ignorant in Georgia and Florida. Georgia's like number 10 right now, or 9 or 10, with the most amount of cases. And Florida's number 5.
Yep. Yep, and we've been slowly growing, and you got to remember, we're like, we have a major city.
Yep.
We're not like Missouri. Well,
that's what I was saying. Look at these: New York, Washington, California, New Jersey, Florida, Illinois, Louisiana, Michigan, Massachusetts, Georgia. Massive cities in every single one of those states.
Yeah, yeah, we're not an Idaho or Montana or something like
or
that.
Or West Virginia, right? You know, like,
yeah.
It's scary. It's sad to hear that people are just like that ignorant still. It's like, come on, man. Like, why? You see all these memes and whatever, and you see, like, you know, that one I'm sure you saw where, like, you know, your grandparents were called to go to war. You're being called to be on the couch and watch Netflix. You can do it.
I guess it's just one of those tough people who have to be right, where they're just putting money down on saying, well, what are the odds on a pandemic? Well, if I act like an idiot and just yell, ah, ha, 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 what are you doing? You're being a baby. The odds are I'm going to look smart.
And what it comes down to is, look, if you have humanity in you, right, and even if you are the toughest, I'm so smart, I could believe – and you heed the advice that you might be a carrier, and you can come in contact with, I come in contact with Mike, and he comes in contact with his grandmother, or his friend who's suffering from cancer, or his friend that has leukemia, or his friend that has whatever it is, asthma, whatever. Don't be an asshole. Like you could be the cause of someone else's family member going, someone else's mother going, someone else's brother. Like, that's kind of more of the point than anything. And it's like, how much humanity do you have? And like just stay home. That's it. Yeah. Go to the store if you have to grab something and come right back home.
Yeah. And add a layer to this. Think of the people who have to make these kind of choices. Like, there's a person where we both know, I won't say her name, but, basically, she does nursing, so she has to go into, like, an elderly care center and help people there. And she also, her mother is very sick and very has immunity issues. She has to go out and pray she doesn't get it, because she'll affect her family and she'll affect a bunch of other people's families in the process. So it's no more clowning around. I mean, when it's all done, we'll all have a good laugh. I'm sure Netflix will have some kind of comedy show about some family had to live through the coronavirus or something weird like that. Maybe they went into a bunker and lived down there for 20 years figuring it was the end of the world or something like that. We'll have a good chuckle.
Yeah.
We're all about that. We'll try to make you chuckle tonight as well, people. But in the end,
we'll try.
Well, we always try. The results have been varied.
Right.
But
non-existent at best.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay, we've been doing this for a while. This is our plan for the apocalypse.
Right.
Like, when everybody is gone and there's zombies and it's just me and Scott, we will still put out this podcast for your Walking Dead pleasure.
As long as me and Mike are still breathing and we're still good, we will probably still be putting this thing out. So you can't get rid of we're worse than a pandemic.
Yeah, I truly think the walking corpse of Dom Bagnato will still download Verbal Shenanigans. I guarantee it. And then we'll be like, take that, Joe Rogan.
That's our new motto, right? Verbal Shenanigans, worse than a pandemic.
It looks great on a t-shirt. I wore my Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt as I was walking around and work and all, just pushing the podcast, as I say, by the way, don't die.
Well, speaking of t-shirts, it's really funny because when we started Skyping and I could see you, I thought the red, and Berlo's got like a red, it's a red skin shirt, but it has gray sleeves and red middle. I thought that the sleeves ended, and the way the light was hitting him, it looked like he just got fully tatted up. And I was like, oh my God. Like, did he just, like, not, there could have been a couple things. Like, you could have had these tats and not told me, because I wouldn't have seen them. Or you just were like, you know what? The pandemic's coming, and I've been wanting the General Lee tattooed on my arm, jumping over my back to the other arm.
Exactly.
For years.
My back is just the whole map of Hazard County, and this is the General Lee, and Roscoe's over on this sleeve. I'll get you, Duke boys.
Yeah, imagine it's like the farm. It's a sleeve dedicated to like the farm on one. One arm, and then in between your shoulder blades is like the generally jumping over, and then the other side is like them pursuing somebody, like chasing them down.
They're like, sir, this is going to take 24 hours and cost you a few thousand dollars. I know what I asked for.
Listen, take my credit card and just do it. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah, but don't tell me you haven't had other people come here about 1979 comedy action shows. Do not tell me that.
If you were on a game show and you – all right, first off, do you believe – we talked about this a little bit before. Do you believe the whole it started from a bat, someone eating a bat?
No. Some cultures eat bats, though I can see this virus as something that – has been around and mutated. I can't fathom it all started on a single bat, because there's just no logic to it. I mean you figure the guy's not eating it raw. Like if some guy was in like Cambodia just grabbing bats that are flying and just shoving it in his mouth, okay, maybe I can make
that would be pretty impressive. Just catching them.
Dude, we brought sandwiches. I know what I like.
It's Damn cheaper than the
Cambodia gym.
It's cheaper than the food in Yankee Stadium. I'm just gonna catch my own.
That'll be $9. No thanks. But it's just so silly and all. It just clearly something that would be on one of those websites that somebody's going to put up on Facebook that travels to a million people, and nobody sits back and sees the other articles on the site to realize how stupid that is. I'm going to say a hard no on that.
I agree with that too. I see the bat thing as like it's too small of a thing to coincidentally cause the largest pandemic in 100 years. Like, to me, it sounds like something somebody would write, and it would work good in a movie scene to show this guy eating a bat, but I don't know. And I know people do eat bats. But here's my question, Berlo. If you were, now like I had asked you this.
Jim, as we just talked about a minute ago.
Jim, just Jim.
Cambodian Jim, just grabbing them bats. Just classic Jim.
I had asked you this before, and we'll see if your opinion changed. So you're on a game show, right? And you are presented with six bats, okay? One of those bats is going to have a super high strain of the pandemic, the COVID-19, and you're going to get it, and most likely it's going to spread and cause a pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. But five of those bats, nothing, just protein. Just
delicious bat.
Yep, just delicious bat soup or whatever, however they eat it. You get to choose one bat and eat it, knowing the consequences that could happen, but knowing that that five out of six, you are okay. What amount of money would it take you to participate in that game show?
Well, I mean, as we kind of talked earlier, I just want to get the qualification. So If I eat the wrong bat, do I still get the money in this scenario?
You get the money no matter what. That's kind of the whole thing. The five bats, either way, you got to live with yourself, right? So here's the guilt part, right? You got to live.
Because that'd be the craziest game show ever. And, you got Corona and you're poor. Take your ass home.
That's actually a pretty funny twist that I didn't even think about. Like, you get no money and you're dead and you ruin the world.
Bum, 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 bum.
See, my thought was that you get the money no matter what for participating in the game show. But the guilt you live with, right? That money that you're paying for your yacht and your jet skis and your vacation, you know that was made on a chance that you could have spread corona to the entire world. Or you took that chance over greed and you caused a world epidemic. Ooh, I like that pause. That was a really deep swallow. Like, oh shit, this is a hard question.
Yeah, now this got real. That would have to be minimum $9
guys. $9 guys.
I got Corona, but I'm going yard sailing.
Woo! I'm going to get me a Slurpee and some Skull.
That's a Georgia first date, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, yeah. Ten mil, you said?
What I was going to say is 9 figures to 10 figures. Ooh. So we're talking at minimum 100 million to live with that. Because the other part is, if I'm going to get that greedy, a part of me would have to be kind of egotistical and say, I need enough money for protection.
Okay. Wow, that lot of money. See, I don't know. That's a tough question. That's why I proposed the question, because I don't really want to answer it. But honestly... Yeah.
You earlier said $3 million for the record.
I was going to say, once you get into that $2, $3 million, I mean, I feel like I might make a bad choice, and then I'll probably infect the whole world. But you know,
Think about $3 million—that's barely enough. I mean, you—it's good money, but you're not like yachts and mansion money. You're talking about I can stay in my house and live my life, and not really worry about bill, the electric bill, but at the same time, your neighbors will be looking at you every time you walk out of your lake-like house. Hey, guys! Hey. Sorry about that pandemic!
Hey, Jim, sorry for killing Grandpa. Sorry. I'm sorry, but I'll take you on the boat.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, guys. Seriously.
You want to come in the hot tub? We'll talk about it. All right. Second question. You, where were you? And you got to be honest, because I will be honest. We're told now, wash your hands, and that's going to be that's the best defense you have. Which, by the way, another thing I don't completely believe, but I think that they like to put at least give you a little hope that you can do something against this. But I think it's going to spread to whoever it spreads to. I think.
Yeah,
it's going to run its course and it's going to go away.
Yeah, to interrupt you for one sec, I highly doubt that hand soap you got at the dollar store is strong enough to beat Corona.
I agree.
But continue.
Okay, so you're told to wash your hands, and I've been doing it. I've been washing my hands nonstop, wiping things down, Lysoling things. And before the epidemic, did you wash your hands all the time?
I would say I do it about 60% of the time.
Okay.
I will say it's not every time I go to the bathroom I wash my hands.
No, me neither.
But it's basically...
Everyone's turning off our podcast right now. They're like, oh, God! Can we get it through listening?
I would say anytime I sit down.
You did a number two.
That what you want.
You did a dooski.
And anytime my hands would get messy either doing yard work or doing stuff around the house.
Doing your painting that you're going to announce later today about your pieces of art that you're going to be selling on our Instagram?
Oh, yeah. 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 I don't wash my hands. So that's art. That stays with me forever.
Right.
The art is my hands.
Right. And then the person receives a little bit of forever, which could be corona, could be AIDS. It doesn't, whatever.
Yeah. I actually don't do paintings. I just keep dipping my hands into paint, and then I go to somebody's house and I go, enjoy. Just put it in their face and walk home.
I got to be honest. A lot of times I would do like a number one ski, and I would do a flip it out, take the pee, and kind of look at all the people like in line and be kind of more grossed out by the people washing their hands, especially in like stadiums and stuff like that. I'd be like, ugh, I don't want to be by that. So I don't know, man. I have a hard time believing that washing your hands is going to do I think it's going to help? Absolutely. But I think, if anything, it's just a general hygiene tip as far as getting rid of most diseases or whatever, or most exposures, but not defeating the coronavirus.
Yeah, I guess I'll also add, as you kind of brought up, it depends on where I am at. If I go in there, I'm like, ugh, it's a guarantee clean, washing my hands, getting a tissue to grab the handle kind of things. Always use the alcohol when coming out of a porta potty. That's a no doubt.
So every time you get out of a porta potty, you drink alcohol.
Yeah. I stone cold it. I get out of the porta potty. I'm like, hell yeah!
I survived. You just smashed beer all. Or
Austin 316 just says, I just use my ass.
I just wipe my ass. So you just come out of the porta potty, chug some alcohol, and you're like, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's real fun, you know. I mean, I got a lot of dates walking out of a porta potty with a quarter of Jack in my hand, you know?
That's when the real looting and rioting starts, when the liquor stores close. If they ever close, all it's over.
Yeah, they got to stay open. You got to come up with some kind of system. At the very least, it's like, what do you want? And they push it out to you.
A lot of breweries by in New Jersey are delivering during this, because they're all closed down for tasting, so they're all delivering now, which I think is great.
And I'll give a thumbs up to them. You put up the article how some of them are also making sanitizing lotions for people while they're down.
Well, you beat me to it, because that's going to be my thing to promote later. But I think I think that's fantastic that there's a couple distilleries now making sanitizer for people, but instead of making liquor, both of which you could probably drink. So, I mean, don't drink the sanitizer, guys, and don't take my advice. But Berlo, I think, you know, we talked about this a lot. I'm sure we'll be back talking about this next week, and possibly the week after, and possibly the week after that. But I think we should put it in like one of the interviews we've done here, and bring on a guest. Lighten up the mood a little bit, getting a little, you know. Remember that there's things outside of this.
I think people are more sad at our attempt to be serious, even comparing it to our comedy. So we probably should at least give them something to look forward to when we put this podcast out.
it's probably, they're probably more sad when we try to be funny, to be honest. At least we're just talking like normal humans. Like when we try to be funny, we probably fail 90% of the time.
No. I think everybody is more sad that Hack the Lantern is about 6 months away from us right now. That's our biggest concern.
But you remember that one time we said something funny? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, what was it, 102?
I mean, I thought it was 130, but I don't know.
No, that wasn't that funny. Come on now.
All right, so Berlo, let's bring on a guest, and let's put a guest in and try to remember that there's things outside of this pandemic. Who we got, Berlo?
Scott, in our long line of interesting guests, she adds to the list. Today we're going to be talking with Sarah Kaufman, who's also known as the Cheese Lady, and we're going to be talking to her about her cheese sculptures that she's done for the world. She has world records. She has done cheese sculptures for Super Bowls and major company events, and we're going to be asking her how'd she come to this art form.
She's probably got a lot of time right now to master her craft, as long as the cheese is still being delivered.
That'd be kind of weird if she just, like, quarantined, just making cheese sculptures, and they can't go anywhere.
I mean, that's what I've been doing, so, I mean, whatever.
Well,
no big deal.
I mean, toe cheese, I guess, is still technically cheese.
Well, let's get her on the line.
Well, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. How are we doing tonight?
Well, I am dandy. I'm got my cheesehead hat on as I'm packing and getting ready for my next trip tomorrow.
Where are you headed out?
I'm headed to Cincinnati. I'm flying red eye to get to Cincinnati on Wednesday and hit the ground carving.
Now, do you wear? Are you wearing the cheese hat on the flight?
Well, you know, there is that famous airplane accident where the pilot put his cheese head hat on and it saved him from getting a big concussion. So, no, I don't.
I heard about that.
I don't have my cheese head hat on, but I have my cheese bracelet and my cheese earrings and my cheese necklace.
I'd expect no less. I'd expect no less.
Right.
Well, I mean, not only in your profession, you are from the Wisconsin area. Just out of curiosity, as like, I don't know, is it a pride thing or almost like an inside joke thing on how much Wisconsin people just like embrace like cheese culture, for lack of a better term?
I have to say it's both. Both the cheese head, the cheese knowledge, the cheese championshipness that Wisconsin cheese is. Cheese is everywhere. you can't go anywhere without cheese and double cheese. And, of course, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. Yeah. So cheese, Packers, and cold. That basically summarizes Wisconsin,
yeah.
I think. I think we got a gist of it.
And cholesterol, from what I can get.
Well, you know, you get your protein and your vitamin D and your calcium along with your cholesterol and your fat. Yeah.
All right. We got to start from me. How does
hey,
one...
Yeah, and what a tasty way to go.
I agree. how does one get into this? Where did you even start? Like, hey, you know, instead of eating or making cheese or doing a million other things with cheese, you decided somewhere along the line that carving cheese was like your calling, if you will. I mean, I'm looking at some of your sculptures. It's pretty amazing. It's all cheese. How did you even get this idea or even get sucked into this?
Well, I really didn't think of it. And cheese found me is the truth. Yeah. I can't take the credit. I worked in advertising graphics. I was a commercial artist. I worked for the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin starting back in 1981, way back there. And I was their artist. And one of the things I did was hire people to carve cheese for us and then work with them on what to carve. And in many cases, it was at a trade show or a big event, and I'd be done with my work. So I would go and help the cheese sculptors sculpt, carve, get ready for shows. So I would just help because I wanted something to do. And many years later, 15 years later, right, when I left the company, it didn't dawn on me. I saw these beautiful sculptures and thought, oh, is that cool? I didn't even think, could I do that? Should I do that? I didn't think that. And many years later, when I left the company, 15 years later, then when I left, they called me, my coworkers called me and said, Sarah, now you have to carve cheese for us. I went, okay. And so they would call and I would carve and ship. I lived in Ohio then. I'd carve and ship whenever they called. I didn't need more to do. So when they called, I would sculpt, carve. And then eventually they started asking me to go to events. And then before you knew it, I had to quit my real job to do my unreal job of cheese carving. And I never looked back.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I can't take the credit. It found me.
So what kind of like tools and equipment are we talking about when we're dealing with making something like this? Is it that far off from like a regular sculpture?
No, it's like clay sculpture. I use clay tools. And, you know, if you really, really just looked at, if I lined up what I really have to have, there's maybe five or six basic tools that I have to have to carve. And if I don't have those tools, I can't get anything done. But I still haul around a 50-pound suitcase with tools and supplies in. But it's clay tools because it's a lot like clay. It's totally subtractive. You can't put anything back. The cheese is firm and consistent, and then I just scrape and style and sculpt.
So now, what's the main thing you're doing? Are you doing trade shows? Are you doing like custom pieces for people for parties? Like, what is the clientele here, and who's hiring you to cut cheese? Is what I'm saying.
It is multiple, all of the above, and way beyond. But most of the time I'm carving in a supermarket for a cheese promotion. I'm brought in by Wisconsin or by the cheese distributors and will be carving cheese along their line or different kinds of Wisconsin cheese in a supermarket. And as I carve, then we sample. And it's mostly that attention getter for the crowd, the shopper. And, of course, anytime you're serving food, people gather. And so I'm carving messages in there about Wisconsin cheese, or I also carve for Southwest dairy farmers. I carve for Michigan. I carve for Indiana. I carve for Florida, all over the country for the dairy groups, Oregon Cheese Fest. So I'm carving messages about the state or the association. But number one is supermarkets. Then I carve at food shows that are trade shows for the trade, and then also at festivals, food and wine festivals, art festivals. I carve at state fairs. I've carved for trucking conventions, carving great big semis. I've carved for the home porting of the Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier out in California for Sargento. Awesome. I've carved for the anniversary of the moonwalk.
That's awesome. That was your record breaker, yeah. Right?
Well, no. My record breaker was down in New Orleans. It was 3,121 pounds. It was a big, big, giant wheel of cheese, a 4,000-pound wheel, and I sculpted in it, and it ended up weighing 3,121 pounds. That was a big alligator stirring a pot of hot oil, because down in New Orleans area, they love the deep fried turkeys. So it was Thanksgiving, and I was at a store called Aquistapace, a very Cajun store down in the area in Covington. And they had a big cheese festival, and each year they get bigger and bigger cheese. And so this 4,000-pound cheddar, when our team heard about it, said, "You have to go for the Guinness World Record." And I know just the girl to do it. Just the cheesehead to do it. So, yeah, I was down there for 4 days carving the big cheese, and we were going for this Guinness World Record.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're in a supermarket, in a Aquistapace market, and it's fantastic, fantastic Cajun foods and cheese, 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 cheese throughout the store as their cheese festival. And I'm in the front as people come in carving this big, it's 66 inches tall, spread out your arms, 4.5 feet in diameter, 4,000-pound cheddar. And so the big chunks come off and they get cut and chunked and wrapped for the people to buy, as well as endless samples. So that's the key thing. Samples. If you taste it, they will buy. Don't even think of carving cheese without giving samples. It just can't happen.
Oh, that was my problem.
Yeah.
Oh, it was God, I knew there was something wrong.
Fabulous cheese.
So with these kind of projects, like, how much time do you get to work on these things? Like, what, from concept of idea to completion, about how long does it take for this whole process?
Well, it all varies, of course. Sometimes I have, when I carve for the state fairs, Indiana State Fair, Michigan, I know the themes and I work ahead with them, doing sketches, and we narrow it down for the committee to approve and or fine tune. But in the case of the gator, I only knew maybe 2 months ahead. So we came up with the concept of the gator, did sketches, and that was very quick. I blow up a big pattern on a blueprint printer to size, and think about some of the logistics I have to think of when I'm working with 640-pound blocks and how I'm going to stack them and how the weight's going to be supported by an inner structure. Did you have a forklift? Do you have a refrigerator that has a big enough door to roll this thing in and out? Things like that. What am I going to build it on? How long does it have to stay out and be observed by the public? How do we, not a lot of details like that that I've learned and work with the host on all of this stuff. But sometimes it's, Sarah, can you come next week? Or can you do this carving and get it to me by next weekend? Sure, what do you want? So I scurry and do a sketch, send it to them for approval, and boom, next day I'm carving, next day I'm shipping.
Now, how do you practice your craft, especially early on when you're learning how to do this? Like, do you have access to this much cheese to practice and work with it? Or are you making your own? Like, how do you get the work in to actually start getting good
at
this?
Well, that's the secret. That's the secret. I do a lot of practice on paper. The more I think through the sculpture and I work, I'm not a modern computer person. I can put it on CAD and twirl it around. So I will work with the front, forward, the side, the back, building it straight up, what's happening. So I do a lot of sketching. And in the case of a gator, I will look up pictures of alligators and online and get the personality of it. How do the fingers work? And do that kind of research. And then from there, which is one-dimensional, then somehow my brain twirls it around and creates 2D, 3D, and I don't know. I think it's a God thing. I think I get streamed sometime because I go, wow, where did that come from? So the planning, the practice, you don't get 640-pound blocks to practice on. I practice on paper.
Nice.
Now, I'm guessing, do you have the same supplier to give cheese? And do you mix it up? Is it always one type of cheese, or do you play around for certain ideas?
Depends on what part of the country I'm in. But I like to work. Sometimes cheese sculptors in the past have ordered cheese be made in a certain 1,200-pound rectangle or something. But I tend to work with cheese as it exists. In 40-pound blocks, which are 11 by 14 by 7, that's the normal manufacturing size for cheddar all over the country. And then large cheese makers make 640-pound blocks. So I work with that dimension. Sometimes I split that, open it up. Sometimes, you know, split it down further to be, here's where the head part is, here's where the tail is. You know, depending on the shape, sometimes the 640-pound blocks are stacked straight up, three of them. Sometimes they're opened up to be wide. So different parts of the country do have the large cheese manufacturers that we will source the 640-pound blocks from. Sometimes I work with wheels. Sometimes I work with Gorgonzola, Gruyere, Provolone. Provolone comes in blocks, but it also comes in long tubes called Provoloni. And they can be 13 pounds, 80 pounds, 150. big, giant, 1,000-pound provolone, which are those long provolone shapes, the salami shape. And so that comes from different manufacturers, and we just kind of source those. It also depends on the state, too, because if you're working in Wisconsin, you, of course, have Wisconsin. If you're working in California, of course, it's California. Oregon, of course, it's Oregon cheese, like that, because it's a message that represents that cheese-making area.
So it's, you've been taken all over the place. You've done a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Is there one thing that stands out among the rest? Like, oh my God, I can't believe I ended up here, or I did this for somebody, or a client that sticks out. Is there one experience that really like kind of still wows you today that you did it?
Well, a really neat current subject was when I went to the Super Bowl when the Packers played the Steelers, and that was down in Dallas, Fort Worth. And I was carving cheese in Central Market there, and ESPN found out I was there carving stuff for the football. I was carving 300-pound wheel and 150-pound wheel with football players in. And they found out about it and said, "We need you to bring your cheese and come and carve for us on the Sunday morning countdown." So that was really cool.
Yeah.
Turning down. Yeah. So here I am with my helper. We loaded the 300-pound cheddar and a cart into the car, and we have to be there by 3:00 in the morning. So we journey down to Fort Worth City Center, where the big deal Super Bowl countdown was, with the big four announcers up there and all the NFL staging. So just watching it yesterday was reminding me when I was at that Super Bowl and carving for ESPN right there at the NFL countdown, at the NFL experience. That was really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Disneyland, now, I gotta ask. Disney World. I've been to Ripley's, believe it or not, Times Square, carving cheese at their Times Square Ripley's place. That was for President's Day, speaking of timely things. That was for President's Day, and they had me carve the Mount Rushmore, Washington, Jefferson, Roosevelt, Lincoln, in a big Mount Rushmore. But they had me make them all, what did they say, Ripley style, where Washington had googly eyes, and Thomas Jefferson was a sword swallower, and John Ripley was very famous for his shrunken heads collection. So they had me carved Roosevelt Teddy.
Was he Teddy Roosevelt? Get it?
and then John Roosevelt's head was peeking in with the shrunken head on a stick. And then Lincoln had a big spike into his nose, because one of the famous Ripley people had a big spike driven through into his nose, into his head block. So they had to do that in Ripley style. That was bizarre.
That's awesome. Now, when you complete a sculpture and it's all done, is it more insulting to not eat the sculpture is it more insulting to not eat it or to somebody want to take a piece out of it?
Well, in many cases, because sometimes I'm carving for big crowds, like a football game, and that the purpose of it is to be eaten by this huge crowd at a big football game. And it's what cheese is for. So it's a befitting end to this 6-foot-long, 200-pound gator to be eaten by the crowd and served to the crowd. Then there's other times when the cheese is on display for 21 days. It's perfectly good, but for health standards and FDA, you need to not serve to the public. Be safe. But cheese is meant to be eaten. That's what the purpose is. So I'm very happy when I know we're going to serve it to a big crowd.
That's awesome. We appreciate you coming on and telling us. I mean, it's so kind of cool to hear when you hear something that's like niche that comes to somebody and it becomes their life and their enjoyment. If people wanted to learn more about you or see some of your sculptures, what's the best way to kind of get a hold of you?
Well, several ways, but the easiest way is to see more of my work is just Google cheese carving or Google cheese sculptures or Google, well, my website is sarahcheeselady.com, but it's all over the place. You can Google YouTube. You can Google Pinterest. You can Google cheese art. It's that simple, and bang, there's 100 pictures of what I've been up to and other stories leading. So cheese stories are everywhere.
Love it. Thanks so much for giving us some of your time here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
All right, Berlo, what if cheese turns out to be the cure to this epidemic? Like, you just have to eat, like, a lot of cheddar.
I mean, I guess we'd probably have a problem with Sarah because she's cutting it all up and throwing away for her sculptures, technically.
If you were stuck, okay, so let's say the pandemic took away everything but one cheese, like all one the cheese? Cheeses. So you had to, like, so a company was like, look, you could only get one cheese for the next year. What cheese would it be?
I guess pepper jack. I like spicy a little bit. It'd be probably pepper between jack. Pepper jack or Munster.
Munster, yeah. I could do pepper jack or a good sharp cheddar is hard to deny, too. Like a sharp cheddar on burgers.
That's good. I mean, it seems kind of straightforward, but then you're like, then like mozzarella's gone, and then it'd be like, or Parmesan.
Oh, God. Blue cheese I love on burgers, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as long as we're not stuck with like a Briere or something, like where it's like, I don't want that.
Yeah, I ask the hard questions here on Verbal Shenanigans. That's what it comes down to.
I know. Hard-hitting questions, Verbal Shenanigans. Yeah.
So, Berlo, we're not going to go much further. I mean, this is clearly something that we might be talking to you about for the next 6 weeks. So we don't want to beat it down. I'm sure there's going to be more to talk about. So we're going to get out of here. Berlo, anything to promote?
I mean, I guess since we're all inside and we want everybody's going to be looking for different forms of entertainment and everything, I'm going to put out a former guest of ours, Jenny Vicks. Very wonderful person, great music. Her EP titled Six came out just last year. People should really check it out. I know she's a big fan of the show, and she puts out some great music. So if you're out, you can look up Jenny Vicks. That's V-I-X on Facebook, or can go to jennyvicks.band to get more information about her her songs and when this is all done, when she's touring, and where you can find her.
Awesome. Yeah, Jen was a good guest. So I'm going to promote. I thought it was just a fantastic story. I don't know if people were doing it nationwide, but it caught my mind, caught my eye on NJ.com. Claremont Distillery in Fairfield, I know exactly where that is. It's right next to, really close to a brewery I like. It's really close to Magnify. They, in the last few week or so, instead of making vodka and bourbon and moonshine or whatnot, they have been making gallons of hand sanitizer to offset the shortages and people killing each other over sanitizer. So they are trying to fight the coronavirus pandemic and giving back to the community. And I think that's freaking awesome. Halting their booze making for a little while and using the same machinery and tanks and whatnot to make sanitizer and contribute back. So I think there's nothing more admirable. So that is Claremont Distilled Spirits right in Fairfield, New Jersey, Claremont Distillery. So pretty really cool story. So guys, I guess there's nothing we can really say that's going to make everybody happier or change things. But if you took the time to listen to us for an hour or whatever the hell this episode's been, or you're a past fan or you're a new fan or you're just someone checking us out, we try to do this every week just to it brings us a lot of happiness, and I hope that comes through on the microphones. We're happy to be able to still do this during this whole thing. And we just hope that all of you out there listening are safe and comfortable and doing the right thing and just being smart. And I have no doubt that you guys all are. So that's really it, man. So we'll tune in next week. We have lots of really great guests on the other side. And I'm not going to promote us too much. Just go follow us on all the social media platforms. Look us up on Google. That's it. Guys, life is funny. And remember that. Remember that. Life is funny. So laugh at it with your spouse. Laugh at it with your husband. Laugh at it with your lover. Whoever you're quarantined with, you're going to kill each other eventually. So laugh at it. Make fun of each other. But just remember the big picture. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
We'll be back, people. Transmissions will